You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to 51 First Dates.
I'm Liza.
And I'm Kimmy.
And we are doing an experiment.
And talking about dating.
And love. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Cheers.
Cheers. Hi, everybody. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kimmy. And welcome to 51 First Dates, a podcast that dreams of making you feel less alone in this thing we do called dating. How are you all? Thank you for being here. Liza, how are you? Thank you for being here.
Thank you for being here. Kimmy's in her partner's closet, which is fun. Mm-hmm. I have like the tiniest baby Monday night buzz, and we're doing it. I feel like it's, you know, it's all coming together. We're thrilled you guys are here. We've a really great episode for you today. We are feeling, how are we feeling?
We're feeling great. We're feeling great. Aren't we? I don't know.
We're feeling great.
We're feeling great. We feel very grateful for all of you. We feel very grateful when you leave us a nice review. It is better than money. Well, I don't know about that, but we're not asking you for money. We feel very grateful for you all when you read Precious Gems and give us nice feedback on that. That's our newsletter at preciousgems.substack.com. Liza, every week you write one. I love your additions, but we get a lot of extra fun DMs about how much people enjoyed your precious gems. I will never say it properly. Sorry, friends. But it's really good. This week you wrote about coming out of this weird pandemic. Of course it's weird. It's a pandemic.
Yeah. I wrote about being fully vaxxed and like having my first couple social interactions with people who are fully vaxxed plus 2 weeks. And even then, like, very paranoidly. And just how I feel like a lizard person, and it's hard, and it's I like continue to feel like I don't know how to talk to people. It's very, very, very strange. But everyone feels this way. And after I think that there's all of a sudden I'm seeing like cartoons and memes everywhere about just how hard it's going to be. So we're all in this together. But I wrote up some tips and thoughts about like starting to go on first dates while feeling like a lizard person. So please check it out. We also list our consumption corner there every week. It's free. You can subscribe. There's a link in the show notes. And also you can join our secret Facebook group. Follow us on Instagram at 51 First Dates Pod. That's it.
Yeah.
And email us your worst first date stories or any thoughts, feelings, questions or suggestions at 51 First Dates. 51 Firsts. Oh my God. 51 First Dates Pod at gmail.com. It's been 4 years.
It's cool. Been 4 years. It's been 4 years. Our four-year-old child. It's still hard, Liza. I can't say anything today. It feels it's just one of those days. It's because it's Monday. Okay. But also, if you're new here and you're like, I want to hear about dates. I want to hear about someone going on one date a week. Go to the beginning. You can hear my journey. You can hear our other daters' journeys. But if you go to episode one, you'll get that content. If you're a regular listener, we're going to do our consumption corner. Or if you're new too, you might be really interested in this guest. And then we're going to have a really amazing episode all about kind of how to craft goodbyes, how to craft non-ghosting responses when you don't want to go on another date, how to set boundaries with friends, with work, all of these things. We have an amazing, amazing human on the podcast today, Justine Infante. She is a sex educator, consultant, and speaker. She's based in New York, but we came to know her as your friendly ghostwriter on Instagram. She has an amazing Instagram page where her followers DM her, you know, different scenarios in their life. You know, maybe they went on two dates with someone and they're not interested in going on the next, or they want to finally define a relationship or set boundaries at work, as I mentioned. And she helps customize text message templates to help people break up, to help people set these other boundaries. So it's really amazing. I'm inspired when I read her Instagram posts, and we talk all about all the different ways, kind of the ingredients to setting boundaries today when we have her on. So we are so grateful that she came on and spent time with us. She's also just super cool, was very down to talk about her own dating experience in New York, and is, yeah, a very...
She's so cool.
Cool human. We love cool humans.
Yeah, I just like... I also really... She talked to us a little bit about her, the way she teaches sex ed to like kids and teens and whatever. And I was just like, oh my God, I wish you had been my sex ed teacher. She's like the future of sex ed, I think.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, this episode's basically just like one huge crafting corner. We just talk about like, how do you write this in a text? And it's really fun. And we know you'll love that interview. Is that all our business?
That's all our business. It was a lot of business. Thank you for bearing with us in our businesswoman vibes. Liza.
We're both wearing suits. Just kidding. I don't have a bra on. So, consumption corner, right?
Yeah, what are
you
consuming?
Do you want to go first?
Oh, I
think you should go first. Okay. I feel like mine is embarrassing, so I'm putting it off.
Okay. Okay, big week for me. You know, your friendly QAnon obsessee who's not in QAnon, into QAnon, but is fascinated by it. There is an HBO documentary called Q Into the Storm. It is fascinating. It is a documentarian who has been following this from very early on. Liza, have you seen this yet?
No, I heard, okay. Well, I heard one thing about it early. Like, I heard someone early say they didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I was like, oh, I won't watch it. And now everyone else likes it.
It's because of
the
way
I just got bad information early.
No, me too. And I didn't watch it despite my fascination. Again, can't say obsession with, fascination with QAnon. It's very much about who's behind QAnon. But I think early on, maybe because it was released week by week and you didn't get to those final episodes, people were a little critical of the way it was portraying kind of this whole story. Almost, I don't know, I don't know what people were critiquing, but everyone's critiquing everything. But even the, like, amazing news, NBC News reporters who kind of cover this, like, quote-unquote dystopia beat, that's their words, not mine, who have done so much amazing work on, like, the disinformation and misinformation out there, they were like, after the last episode, wow. Like, this documentarian, it's not the Jinx moment that Robert Durst.
Mm-hmm.
Doc, it's not to that level, but it almost is. There is access to these people who are highly involved with QAnon, if not QAnon themselves, the people who run the scary board 8chan that the posts are on. It's all real scary. I highly recommend it. Had the same reaction, like, wow, this was so good. Why did someone tell me it was bad? So I don't know what happened out there, but check it out.
Yeah. Maybe just like a slow starter, but that's great. I've been wanting to watch it and have been, yeah, unsure, but you, as always, I will watch anything you tell me to forever.
It's like a great window into all the different paths, you know, privileged white men who are also nerdy can take, because there are these like amazing reporters who are doing great jobs and like journalists, but then there are just these people lurking on the internet. I don't know, that's a little unfair of me to characterize it as that, because it's not only white men. There are plenty of women in this documentary, oh my goodness. But recommend. Can I do one more?
Of course.
Okay. The other show I've been posting about, and I just think is very delightful, is Jamie Lee's show on Netflix, The Wedding Plan. Oh, my God. Now I don't know what it's called. Wow. I watched almost all of them. I'm doing this in real time.
I've heard really, really good things about it from a couple people. I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, so The Wedding Coach. Sorry, not The Wedding Planner. That's the J-Lo, Matthew McConaughey vehicle. Okay. Jamie Lee, she's been on this podcast. Definitely go back and check out her episode. We talked a lot about her book, Wediculous. The show is kind of, you take like the TLC shows that are about weddings, but then you have Jamie and like her comedian friends just kind of questioning, well, why do you feel pressure to do this? Questioning, why do you feel pressure to even have this kind of moment in your wedding? And I don't know. I just thought it was delightful. I love the premise behind it, kind of like what we would in our wildest dreams strive to do with dating. Just like, yeah, you can still have a wedding. There's no shade. You don't have to be too cool for the wedding. But let's talk about all the real feelings that go along with it, all the family complications. And the Matteo Lane one, I think it's the third one. He's very funny. I was laughing out loud at. So I would check it out. I haven't seen them all. It's on Netflix. Really easy and fun watch. So those are my two recs this week.
Fuck yeah. I feel like I need to watch that for my like spiritual well-being.
Yeah. Right. Oh yeah, Liza, wait. Like, you are the target audience, I feel. Yes, please,
I know. Just like, how do you do this in a way that doesn't feel like a weird, outdated ritual? The answer is you don't, or whatever, you try and it still feels outdated.
Yes, I think this, I can tell in this moment, this show is for you, Liza.
Okay, amazing. I will definitely watch. Okay, so mine are such garbage. I will go from least trashy first. So I found a comedian friend of mine recommended this stand-up comic called Nate Bargatze, and he has two specials on Netflix. They're both really funny. He has a ton of clips on YouTube. I've been just going in this deep hole of watching him like late at night, and he is like a white guy. He doesn't have anything. He doesn't have a shtick. He's Southern. He's from Tennessee. He's got like an accent, and he's just extremely mellow, and he's so funny. He's just such a shining example to me of like actually just a funny guy. He's not relying on, I have not been offended by a single thing out of his mouth, but he's really smart. He's the butt of a lot of his own jokes, but he's not like, it's not like I'm so like fat and stupid in this. He's like a smart, mellow male comedian who doesn't say anything that makes me feel uncomfortable. And I feel like that doesn't exist. It's like calming to watch him because it's just, you know, he has just like funny stories about ordering coffee, and it's like it fills a hole that I really, really enjoy, which is, yeah, male comedians who never make me mad. and I would just really like recommend that. It's like very low key, funny stand up comedy. Not going to make you think too much. It's just like good shit. The other thing I'm watching a lot of that I keep talking about is 90 Day Fiance, and I'm back. I used to talk about Before the 90 Days a lot, and I've run through all the Before the 90 Days seasons, and I'm just watching regular ass 90 Day Fiance. It's so fucked up. But it is, okay, like, this is my continued pitch for it. It is like it's a show about dating. I mean, it's about a lot of things, mm-hmm. and there's so much fucked up shit, but it's like two strangers who have decided to get married, which is insane, but also like they're getting to know each other, they're figuring stuff out, they're negotiating like how they fight and how they this and whatever, and a lot of times there is ulterior motives, and there's all kinds of stuff going on, but I do think it's like a really interesting human behavior show, and I love all of the interview, like I think the producers who interview do a really good job, and like the interviews are my favorite part because they're all just so uncomfortable. So I've really been crushing a lot of that. And then my last one I'll do is a book that I'm sure a lot of people have read, and like several people have told me to read a bunch of times, but I actually just started reading it. It's called Red, White, and Royal Blue. Have you heard of this book or read it?
I have, because I believe you had a great TV show idea that kind of is similar to this book. We can cut this out. We won't spoil your idea because it's really good.
Yes, absolutely. it's basically just about like the son of the president of the United States falling in love with the prince of England. And they have like this transatlantic, like closeted kind of like secret romance. And it's complete like chick lit. It is not a very good book, but it's like a very good book. I can't wait. I'm sure there's going to be a rom-com with like the most beautiful people. It's going to get the full like Crazy Rich Asians treatment with just like a ton of production value and like beautiful humans. And I will be there on its release date in theaters.
I have only heard great things about that book. And I feel you're being too harsh on yourself. There's not... I mean, 90 Day, we could call it garbage, but it's garbage that most of the people are interested in. It's fascinating. I think, you know, all of this sounds like something I'd like to consume. So, bravo to you, Liza.
It's been a mix. I mean, I'm just, like, proud of myself for reading a book. I finally decided, like, okay, I was trying to read, like, if you've been listening to this podcast through the pandemic, you know I'm having, like, a very tough time reading, and it really has been bumming me out. And partially, I've just been trying to read really serious books. And I just was like, it's a really serious time in the world. Like, I think I gotta just pull it back a little bit. Like, Usually I don't tend to read lighter books because I tend to watch a lot of really light TV, like 90 Day Fiancé. Like, TV is where I go to for light shit. And reading is more of like a, you know, I want to learn something. I want to feel something. I want to whatever. So I just decided, like, fuck it, man. Let's get some chick lit going. And it's been really fun. And I've just been crushing this book.
That's inspiring. I really want to read that book. Maybe I'll propose it to my book club, though. They did extend our last month's book club date until to this upcoming Sunday, which is April 18th. And I have not read the book still, despite the extension I got. So, oops.
It's okay. Book clubs are hard.
They're hard. It's, you know, March, I failed. It kind of ran into April. We'll see. Anyways, I'm going to propose that. Those were great consumption wrecks, I feel. Now, who wants to learn how to break up with someone on text without being an a-hole? I do. Okay. What's wrong with me today?
First, you're going to learn about a sponsor, and then we're going to talk to our lovely guest.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Okay, we are so excited to be talking to Justine Aponte. We fangirled you a little bit over your Instagram account, your friendly ghostwriter. Thank you so much for joining us.
So happy to be here.
Very excited to dive into, you know, everything and all things related to your Instagram, your broader work, everything, you know, setting boundaries, being brave in texting. But we love to start off with our typical icebreaker of, do you have a worst first date story?
I am lucky to not have too many bad first dates, but I will share this one which would fall under my truth benders category of my page. So we were chatting for probably a week or so. I think we matched on OkCupid several years back, and the pictures seemed very athletic. And he recommended me some great music. And I thought there was some good, decent enough vibe that I would say yes to a first date should he invite. And he did. And then we met up at this coffee shop, and there were probably only like five warm bodies in there, and none of them looked like the pictures of this gentleman. And so I said, okay, maybe I'm early, but I'm pretty sure, I think he just texted me that he's here. So I'm looking around, and then I see someone who then starts doing like the, are you Justine kind of face. And I went, oh, it's this guy. Those were clearly pictures from at least a decade ago then. And I said, all right, it's fine. Everyone's, you know, body's going to change. And, you know, he's still got the same personality probably than, you know, with how we've been texting. And so I went in to give him a hug. This is well before COVID days. Oh, yeah. And, he reeked, like really reeked. And that's not something that's going to come through the text messaging. So I was like, oh, okay. Interesting. I haven't had this problem before. So I just figured, all right, you know, maybe, you know, it's an old sweater and it's his favorite one. I'm like trying to give the benefit of the doubt as much as I can. And as I pull away, I start to like inspect the sweater a little bit, because I'm just assuming it's not body odor. It's just a non-laundered sweater. And the cuffs of the sweater were extremely tattered, but not in like a vintage Abercrombie and Fitch kind of way. It mm-hmm. looked like it had been eaten by like rodents or something. And anyways, I only describe that way because basically how then he started to talk, because we never spoke on the phone, we only texted, and he sounded like the voice actor of Eeyore. And oh, like from Winnie the Pooh. Yeah. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So then we start talking, and I just started to feel sad. Like, I mean, I just started to match his like body language, his, you know, he started describing like how low he was feeling about like his roommate had just left him because he said he was too messy. He just started a new job that's a lot more challenging than he thought it was going to be. He didn't really have many positive things to say with what was going on with his life. And it just started to like match this, like, I feel like right now he's at a point in his life where He's hoping to get some levity with maybe going on this date with me, but I also know it's not my responsibility to be that bright light, but I tried really hard because it turned in quickly to a pity date. And, you know, 45 minutes in, I was finishing up like the mocha or whatever he had gotten me. And I was like, all right, I'm going to be done with this drink and that'll be the end of the date. And he saw that like I'd finished my drink and said, Justine, I know this probably isn't going really well. And I'm probably not the guy that you thought I was going to be, but it would just mean a whole lot to me if you could have one more drink with me.
Oh my, God.
Oh, my heart.
And I said, okay. Like, I couldn't assert my boundary. Ironically, I felt so bad for him. He was just really having a hard time. And I said, sure. So I had a second drink and then when that one finished, you know, like I closed up shop and I said, you know, I hope things turn around for you and, you know, that you end up liking your job and, you know, whatever it is, and you find a great new roommate. And he'd asked me for this hug. And he held on tighter than I had imagined. So, you know, it wasn't like a bad date. It was a very unexpected date given like the personality that he was putting out there. But I hope that things have turned around for him and he's a little bit better in a happier place. But
that's so sad.
Yeah. So that's like a truth bender one for me.
Yeah.
I hope he's doing all right.
Yeah. What a tricky moment too. Cause of course you want to assert your boundaries, but there's also like this human to human thing of like, oh, this is a very sad person, probably in need of an ear, but then it's like, but do I have to be that ear? Right. I don't know. You know, it's like, that's a very, very tricky situation to find yourself in.
Yeah. I said, you know what? All right. Companionship. All right, it's another drink. He's paying for it.
Yeah.
Another drink. This is a champagne problem. Justine, you can do it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, my heart is, like, really feeling right? it right now. And yet I'm also, like, to what you just shared, Justine and Liza, I'm like, but yeah, like, you then the long hug, like, there were boundaries. Like, I feel for you as well. It's also tricky and so relevant to the work that you do. So. Yeah. Oh, God. My heart. I feel so sad.
Yeah.
Sorry to start off on this buzzkill.
No.
No, I feel like that gets the title of, like, saddest first date. Yeah.
We've been, like, reframing, you know, because I really appreciate – we've had guests on who, like, Shani Silver and just, like, women who are, like, I don't love this narrative of, like, worst first dates are fun or funny. And I agree with that, too, because they can be so awful. But this is just, saddest. It's, like, worst for everyone involved. And those, you know, who hear about it. I hope he's in a great place, too.
Me too.
Okay, before we get into your Instagram account, because clearly I'm like itching to talk about it, we also have another cheesy icebreaker, but I think, this is a dating and relationship podcast, so it will help people get to know you. What is your relationship to relationships? What has it been? How do you kind of describe it? You know, however you want to interpret that.
The adjective I usually use to describe my dating life is robust. Mm-hmm. I think it's like sometimes when people say the word interesting to be kind of like neutral, but have a lot of feelings. But for me, it's robust in the amount that I have dated. It's uncanny how small of a world Manhattan is. I have dated a number of men who know the men I have dated. this just happened this past week. It turns out that that's the guy's boss. And so that happens a lot. So robust in terms of amount, and then robust in terms of the inner work that I've been able to do as a result of the different personalities I've interacted with. I really didn't start dating until I moved to New York when I was 26, I think. And I'd always been in like long-term relationships before that, serially, and with people who were my friends first. So when I came to New York, I had my first real dates for the first time. And then, you know, the rest is history. And so I learned after all of those, you know, first dates and blind dates and all those kinds of things that it really tested who I was as a person in, you know, in real time, in front of a complete stranger, with a vulnerability that I didn't really exercise much before because I had friends who turned into boyfriends. And so I learned a lot about myself. And that's, I think, how I learned a lot about what boundaries need to be for me and how that can change over time and how that might be different for different types of people that I'm interacting with too. So robust and introspective, I guess, is how I would describe my relationship to relationships.
I love it.
I want that to be everyone's adjectives. Yeah. That's like, that would be what I would want dating to be like for everybody, if possible. And it's so hard to get to that point, but incredible that you have.
Yeah, I feel like every person I've like dated, even if it was a first date to like a 5-year, you know, long relationship, has primed me for, you know, the next person that I'm going to be with, for the better, I'd like to think. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of gratitude despite how tumultuous some of those, you know, histories might be, because I think I learned so much in a relationship that I try to bring that lesson, you know, towards the next one, so that I either don't do that again, or I'm a little bit more open-minded about something, or I'm just more receptive to a different type of idea or value. Mm.
That's really inspirational.
I know.
So speaking of, can you tell us a little bit about what your kind of inspiration was to start your Instagram, start your friendly ghostwriter?
So it actually wasn't me that was inspired to do it. One of my very best friends, you know, has been in the front seat of a lot of my dating life. And so, you know, whenever I ended a relationship, not even a relationship, anytime I ended like a first, second or third date, and I would be telling her like how those dates were. And I said, yeah, it didn't work out. I needed to end it with him. She asked like, oh, what did you say? And then I summed it up. She's like, no, text me, like copy paste what you texted him. I said, all right. And so I started just doing that regularly. And after a good number of the robust number of dates that I've rejected, she said, I hope you're saving this on a spreadsheet somewhere. And it's very much in line with how her and I were with studying in grad school together. She's very like organized and type A as well. And so she's like, I hope you're saving this. And I was like, why would I save these? She's, these are so well written. And I feel like people would benefit from this at some point in the future. I go, how would I share this? And she goes, I don't know, but you should just be keeping them. Or if anything, you have your own, you know, archive to refer to when something similar happens with another person you go on a date with. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure. So I just started like creating on like an Evernote, you know, blank document, just copy pasting whatever I sent to, you know, the guy, and started to rack up. And over COVID, I said, okay, I have this really long document of content that's fairly rich in, you know, compassion and assertiveness. Maybe it's time I do something, you know, with it. And so over COVID, I decided to put it into an Instagram account, but because I'm tend to be very organized, I wanted it to be easy to navigate, whether it be color coding or, you know, categorizing it, and then being open to interacting with people who might be interested. And I've been really encouraged by the number of followers in the 2.5 months it's been out, and the level of gratitude that people have for something that for me, I have taken for granted because this is just how I speak to people. But I didn't realize it was necessarily a skill set that some people struggle with or don't even have. And so I've been really encouraged by, you know, the thanks that I've been getting and the new ideas that I've been getting to exercise this type of creative muscle kind of bolster my sex education career in this very different type of way.
Yeah, it's truly, and you know, we'll have shouted out it very much in the intro and everything, but if you are still listening to this podcast and have not checked it out, pause it and go check out Justine's account, because it is a skill set. To me, I'm like, I couldn't do that. And I'm curious to know how you feel like it does like kind of intertwine with the work you do. You have your master's in education and public health in sexuality, correct? So yeah. It's like, of course you'd be like, this is natural for me, you know, creating these responses, setting boundaries, you know. And then also sharing that with other people. But yeah, how does like, do you feel, this is a dumb question. Of course it is intertwined with like your knowledge base and your career, but I'm just curious how you kind of think about your work and then this Instagram together.
Yeah, I think how it all intersected was years ago when I started teaching, you know, sex education, I had lessons around like defining love and self-worth. Mm-hmm. And it had nothing to do with, you know, breaking up with people in compassionate ways. It was just teaching, you know, my high school students, you know, what are healthy ways of understanding love? Just because, you know, you feel an attraction towards someone doesn't mean you automatically trust that person. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge difference between love and trust, which is, you know, one of my mentors and how they taught, you know, sex ed to me is making that difference very clear. And so the emotion needs to also be tied with some level of practicality. And, so with those lessons, I started like helping my own students understand, you know, self-worth needs to be understood well. And, you know, you accept the love that you think you deserve. So let's make sense of what love is and why you believe you're deserving of that. So it became like a bit of like the self-esteem lesson that evolved over time. And then I started doing a lot of work on consent education and boundary setting around different behaviors of sexuality. And so the language there was very much about, you know, what feels good to you? Are you okay with this? Do you like that? Do you want more? And that type of language is stuff that I have found it for people to really struggle asking or asserting because it's awkward or because this, you know, stigma of sex is still so strong. And then I, you know, realized consent culture can only be realized if we even know that we are deserving of having our boundaries honored. And so it all intertwined in that way. And I think that's why it comes naturally to me to be able to assert a boundary because I've also been teaching it so often and in I think simplified ways in a school environment, whether it be my first graders to my 12th graders and saying like, well, is this fun for you? That's like the bottom line. If it's pleasure-based sex education, do you have fun when you hang out with this friend? And they're like, no, because they're always mean to me. I'm like, okay, so what can you say to them? Like, well, I don't like it when you do this. It hurts my feelings when. And then I have a similar conversation with my 12th graders who are coming to my office asking like, well, I just don't know if like I'm ready to have sex with them yet. And I was like, okay, so what might you say? Like, I don't know, because I feel like I'm supposed to, like I'm about to graduate. I'm like, okay, so you're letting an external factor tell you that you need to do something with your body that you're not even ready for. And so having those conversations for, you know, 10 years of my sex ed career, I think just helped me to, you know, come up with these text message templates in probably quicker ways and more natural ways than others can get to. But I'm glad that I can offer it in such like explicit and practical ways now to Instagram.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm so jealous of your students. Like, I just really wish, like, they're so incredibly lucky to have had you as their educator. Like I wish my experience of sex ed had been similar to that. And I grew up in a liberal area. We had, you know, we did not even have like the worst version of sex ed, but it was very like fear based and like, look at these pictures of genital herpes. Right. And that was kind of like the thing. And again, that was considered like the better kind of sex ed because they were not abstinence only. They were very upfront. They were very, you know, but to have sex ed also be folded into how to communicate and how to understand like the emotional side of relationships is so fucking cool. I think that's awesome.
Thanks. I wish I had it too.
I know.
I know. It's like, but what, just kind of thinking a little bit, like we, you know, we've had this podcast for a while and I feel like we hear from so many listeners. We talk to so many people about dating. And I feel like 75% of problems with dating boil down to boundaries. Mm. Why do you think it's so, so difficult for people to set boundaries?
So I'm going to gender my answer here because it's reality. I think that femmes struggle the most with this because we have been socialized in this patriarchal society to be the caretaker, be the caregiver, and prioritize other people's comfort and feelings over our own. So asserting boundaries sounds so contrary to our core, but making sure other people are comfortable and that we are respecting their boundaries is what, you know, is something that feels normal for us. And so it's a radical act to really pick yourself first. And I'm glad that, you know, this buzzword of self-care is becoming more and more popular. But I think people think of self-care and think manicures and massages and, you know, watching TV or something. And when people ask me, you know, in panels that I'm on, you know, what are your self-care practices? I'm like, I don't accept friend requests from people that I actually want to, for them to know like what I've cooked that day, or I actually unfriend a lot of people because I only want to have like 200 people have access to my Facebook. And they're like, that kind of sounds mean. And I went, to whom? Mm-hmm. Like, my boundaries are meant to honor me, not to offend you. And, you know, that's one of like my favorite mantras that, you know, one of my chosen fam sis, JL Umipig has like taught me. My boundaries are not meant to offend you. They're meant to honor me. And when I, you know, when she has that up on her, you know, her Instagram account and like in our relationship together, and I see her put that into practice, I see how she actually does take care of me better as a friend, because she is prioritizing herself first. And that is an unfortunately radical act, but it was because of that mantra that really pushed me and propelled me forward to start figuring out other ways to protect my time and my energy and who is going to be taking up that time or energy. And that involves the people that I choose to spend that time with. So that's mainly been how I've gotten there.
It's so inspiring. Again, we're just going to nerd out and just be fangirly, but I'm like, even just hearing you articulate these, you know, quote unquote, or unfortunately radical ideas around boundaries, is just like inspiring me to think about even thinking about career or like my relationships at work, just throughout life, how I don't have a great relationship with boundaries. And that's probably why I was so obsessed when we were sent by multiple people at your Instagram. But Justine, okay, kind of boiling, getting closer to like the actual posts that you make.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Oh, because you, again, huge shout out to you for having it color coded, having it be so organized. I'm curious what kind of category or type of response you get the most DMs about, you know, when it comes to how should I respond to this text? And like as a secondary question, if it surprised you, if it's like exactly what you thought, or if it's a different kind of category that comes up a lot.
I haven't run the analytics yet, since I'm still only like just over 2 months in. I will need to, but I feel like the most requests I've gotten, because I think in total I've gotten about 60, and the rest that you've seen are from my own personal life that I have personally sent to people. So of the 60, which is a very small data set, I think most of it has to do with, oh gosh, I don't even know if there's a trend yet.
No, that's okay. That's okay. That was, yeah.
Sorry. I think, of the 60, the one I'm starting to get a lot more now because people are seeing that I'm not only doing dating boundaries is how do I break up with a friend?
Oh my gosh. So relevant. Yeah. We just recently talked about this.
Okay. So that's been coming up in the last 2 weeks since I launched the good boundary kind of categories as opposed to a goodbye, because I had said, look, sometimes you don't want to like totally say goodbye to somebody. You just want more space or time, but you want them still in your life, but just in a different type of capacity. And then once I opened up friendship under that, people just said, well, I actually want a goodbye, but for a friend. And I was like, okay, all right, well, tell me the reason why. And they'll say, you know, it's just because we've been friends since childhood. Now I just feel obligated to still hang out with them, but it feels very contrived whenever we do. And so I was like, all right, that sounds like it falls under like the no chemistry dating boundary goodbyes that I used to do. So I'll just put it under no chemistry. And it's, you know, around a friendship that, you know, just has fallen, you know, fallen off from what it used to be. So I feel like the friendship ones, have been maybe the most common, but that might just be because it's the freshest in my mind of the most recent requests.
Yeah. And so we without, you know, every situation is specific and different, but how would you kind of, if there were ingredients to the friendship breakup, what would you suggest?
Well, I always remind people that I am not a therapist.
Yes.
I do have more degrees than I should, and I'm very tired from acquiring them, but none of them have to do with being a therapist. And so I remind people of that. But I guess I have different formulas. I'm not saying that they're right, but I feel like there are different ways people can go. And that's, mm-hmm. again, why I have to remind people, like, this might not be right because I'm not a therapist, but let me kind of like mimic the tone that you are aiming for and we'll get there. So in the DMs, you know, I'll ask them like, well, what do you want? Do you want to fully cut off ties and never speak to this person again? Or do you just want to let them know what they did and then see if you can repair and heal and then recover? Or what? And when the request is, no, I just completely want to end it, but I feel bad. And I want to do it in a nice way because we have a history and our parents are friends, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then I said, all right, this sounds like you could do a compliment sandwich. So say what you love about your friendship and the history that is makes it unique to the two of you. And then address the tension or the issue at hand that occurred. And then the third part would be like the, and I hope we can repair and move forward from this now that you know that that thing or event made me feel uncomfortable. So you have like the happy, here's the problem, and then happy going forward kind of thing. So that would be like one, I guess, approach. When I'll get the, no, I just don't want to be friends with this person anymore. It's, you know, really frustrating and obligatory. Then I would say like, all right, this is an open face compliment sandwich. So, you know, you have the, I appreciate, you know, what we have, you know, built together over the 25 years, you know, we've been friends and I feel like we're going in different directions now and would probably be better that, you know, we respect those different pathways and then that's it. And then if, and I did recently get one about a friend who's crossed a line. So there was like a full violation, either a physical boundary or an emotional boundary, and someone taking advantage of their history to know exactly the right button to push to intentionally offend and hurt. And so that one is more of just like the cross the line category that I have in dating and like, no need for a compliment or anything happy there. So there's no bread afforded on this one. And it's just the meat on like, look, you did this thing and it hurt my feelings. And this is not something that I want to, you know, maintain in my life. So I, you know, I hope you'll respect why you won't be hearing from me anymore or accepting any of your invitations. And then that's that.
It's so interesting.
God, it sounds so empowering just to hear you say these things. Yep. Like it makes me wish I had been clearer about boundaries in the past. It's always been something I've struggled with. I think I'm getting better, but sometimes my therapist reminds me that I'm still working on it a lot. But it feels like mostly we kind of talk on this podcast about like early days of dating. Mm-hmm. And I feel like communication struggles around that in particular can be so tricky because often it's like you don't really know the person or you have some, almost like you were saying, you have like a small data set around them. You're like, okay, I can infer these kind of like general things about this person based on, you know, a handful of text conversations, a couple times meeting in real life and like, that's it.
Right.
Do you have any thoughts generally on how to set boundaries or ask for clearer communication with someone who there isn't a history with or who you don't really know?
I like to model what I want to see from them by telling them like what they can expect from me. So I have a really buggy phone right now. I'm like, I saw that like, okay, I bought this phone a year and a half ago and usually these phones are built for only 2 years now. And so I'm getting like self-conscious that people aren't receiving my text messages. Cause I'm like, all right, is he ghosting me right now? Or did my text again not go through? Cause that has legitimately been happening. And so it was actually this morning I texted, two people that I am, that I just went on first dates with, because I hadn't heard back and it's been, and they usually replied within like 3 hours and it's been like now a day. And just yesterday a friend said, hey, you didn't send me, you know, the email address I asked. And I said, yeah, I did. I screenshotted it. And she's like, oh, that never came through. So I was like, oh God, these guys either think I'm an asshole now because I didn't reply to them, though I definitely did, but I'm not hearing them reply back. So that I'm feeling like my own insecurities. So I said, all right, well, I've known him for 2 hours total and that other guy 2.5 hours. So I don't have a history to know if this is something they commonly do or not. So I'm just going to say what's happening. And I was just fully honest. I said, hey, what's the last text message you received from me? Because my phone's been buggy recently. And, you know, he replied back saying, oh, you know, something about have a good night. I said, okay, cool. So you haven't been victim yet to my phone and its bug. And then I said, and then we carried on our conversation about whatever else. So I was like, all right, so that one, fine. He knows that. Oh, and I said something like, if you don't hear from me within 12 hours, know that my phone, you've probably become victim to my phone, whatever. Cause I am usually someone that responds at least usually within the hour. But if you don't hear from me for 12, mm-hmm. I don't want you to think I'm an asshole. I literally have something going on my phone. So I was just very explicit with that. And then the other guy, I basically just said, hey, not sure if you got my last text because it's been buggy recently, but here's what I had sent. And that one was important to me because we had a good first date and he had followed up saying that was so much fun. When I get back from my trip, I hope we can reconnect in person or something. And so I was like acknowledging and agreeing with that. And I didn't want him to think like, oh, I guess she didn't have a good first date because I haven't heard from her in 6 hours or whatever it was. But I had replied pretty soon after, but I didn't hear from him for a day. So then I followed up today and said, you know, hey, my phone's been buggy. In case you didn't get my reply, here it is again. And then he replied quickly saying, no, I totally got that. And I am totally interested in hitting you up while I'm in, you know, when I'm out of town. It's me being the dick. I'm really bad with texting. So at least now I knew, okay. So he knew that I was just being honest and hopefully not thirsty sounding. I'm just like, you're not texting me back. Text me back now. Because it was, the onus felt like it was on me to reply to him. And so I felt like those two examples were microcosms of like how I normally am. I say like, look, I'm about to go into a meeting. So you're probably not going to hear from me in the next 2 hours, but I'll get back to you and answer that question shortly. So I like to manage people's expectations because I like my expectations managed. And so if they go, you know, if they say like, oh, okay, yeah, no problem. I was like, yeah, I just don't want you to think I'm leaving you on read. But you know, I have another life besides dating you. And so I usually let them know ahead of time. It's like when you can expect to hear from me next. And if they don't reciprocate that, I usually, you know, will say something on like a, it helps me to know when you're available so that, you know, I can emotionally and logistically manage like, you know, the date for this weekend. And honestly, I've ended a lot of like short-term like dating relationships because they have been so spontaneous, as they want to call it, when it's more like, no, you're a flake and doesn't respect my time. And I was very clear about, you know, you needing to be, you know, explicit with when you are available. And I get that you're an investment banker, but also, you know, I know you have to go to the bathroom every so often and you probably take your phone with you. So, you know, that would be the quick time to just say like, can't get to it right now, but I'll reply to you tonight. And I'm not asking always for an answer. I'm just asking for managed expectations. So that's like something that's important to me that might not be the case for everyone else. But to answer your question, Liza, it's more like I model for them what I want to be received in return. And I think that's because like I learned that in education school, like you want your students to be able to learn in a way that makes sense. And so I try to model what learning looks like when I'm teaching to them.
I'm thinking about if I, you know, you acknowledge that this might not be everyone's kind of communication style or they don't want their expectations managed, but I am thinking of so many times my anxiety would have been mitigated or just wiped away entirely if I had said things like you did, like just been a little clearer about what my expectations were around communication. And it feels like a version of what, you know, definitely comes up in a lot of the responses you craft around ghosting or saying, you know, yes or no to a after a first date. So, you know, to ghost or not to ghost, we are on the side of don't ghost. And I know, you know, your work is about, you know, dating's a vulnerable thing, like sharing feedback and, you know, being clear with your expectations is really positive. I'm curious, you know, I just know there are people listening thinking about, but it would just be so easy to like not reply. We've only been on one date, you know, and I feel that I had those tendencies as well. How do you navigate or how would you recommend, again, knowing that every response is different, that just that like after a first date, the urge to ghost, but then why? I guess maybe like pitch us on why you should actually not ghost, you know?
Oh, that's actually easy. If you don't feel like it's safe for you to say something, because maybe the reason you don't want to go on a second date with that person is because they seem like volatile and, you know, aggressive, then ghosting Ghost. Might be the option.
Yeah.
Hopefully that is rare. And that is why I am providing this like service, because I think it's more on like, well, I feel bad. Mm-hmm. Got it. Like nobody likes to reject anyone and nobody likes to feel rejected. And dating already sucks the way it is. And it's exacerbated with ghosting.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason that I'm a proponent of not ghosting if it's safe for you to not ghost is because I've been pleasantly surprised by how well received a rejection can be taken if it's delivered in a compassionate way. Mm-hmm. So the only reason that I think you shouldn't, that you should ghost is if it's unsafe for you to reach out to that person again. That is it. So whether you feel like there's an imminent threat to your physical or emotional health by potentially, even if it's a compassionate rejection, that this person, you know, will really react in a poor way that puts you in an unsafe position, then ghost, go ahead. I'm a proponent. But you know, I've been a recipient of replies to my rejections with a, wow, you know, I'm actually really impressed that you decided to tell me that you weren't interested anymore when you could have easily ghosted me. Thanks for your honesty. And then another one was, oh, that's a bummer because I really like you, but thanks for not just ghosting me. Mm-hmm. another one was, oh, that's too bad. But you know, I wish you well as too. You know, so I mean, they've actually been fine and calm. And then in some ways I had to provide feedback because some of them are like, really? I thought we really hit it off. Mm. And so in that sense, I mean, this is what, like why matchmakers get paid. Like they give feedback, right? And who's going to give better feedback than the person you dated, right? And so I figured, all right, well, it's possible to give constructive feedback to somebody. It's just, are they able to handle it? And that's where I've also seen some true colors where I was very affirmed that I ended it and rejected the right person because of how fragile their replies were to some of my constructive feedback, despite how compassionate they were. So that was an extra, you know, red flag after I already rejected them to go like, oh, Justine, good call. Cause look at him now.
Oh yeah. Have been there. Yes. It's like very validating, even though it's generally disappointing that humans, you know, act that way in the world. But yeah, mm-hmm. When I think about it and think back to times I, you know, made excuses. If I wasn't a ghoster, but I made excuses. And what I think is so refreshing about your replies is just the honesty, but not ever being cruel. Just, I'm curious.
Sometimes I'm cruel. I did a cruel one with with some of my joke ones on like Melania and Kanye.
That's fine. we're acceptable. Down for that. Yeah. They deserve it. But I kind of like I asked you already with the friendship one. What are like the maybe like structure ingredients to making sure that, again, the situation being, because a lot of when we ask people what they needed help with, it's like turning someone down in early dating after a first date. What are kind of the ingredients? Is it compliment sandwich again? Are there any, like when you're giving someone feedback in such a vulnerable situation, what are your tips and tricks?
Yeah. I statements. I know that sounds very like elementary school, but I mean, the reason we teach that is because we wish people communicated more with I statements as opposed to accusatory statements mm-hmm. with you, right? Even if that person actually is guilty of X, Y, and Z, what's important and cannot be negated is how you feel about it. And so I think it's always important with most of the, you know, templates that it includes, like, I felt this when you did this, as opposed to, well, you're an ass because you did this and that's it. Right. And I think that's where that the compassion part comes in, is like, I just don't feel comfortable when, it's not aligned with my value set, that, like, whatever it is. So I think, yeah, just really focusing on the I statement. It doesn't literally always have to end in I or start with I, but I think the framework when you're composing your own should be under your lens and not, it should be from you being A and that person being B, and the direction should be like A to B and not like, here's staying at B and here's what's wrong with B all the time. Mm-hmm. But more like, here is how A is being impacted and feels, because that's something that you can't negate. It's like, that's your story. Whereas they can say, no, I don't do that. But they can't say, no, you don't feel that. That's an invalid statement. So I think I statements and really crafting your response through your lens, your feelings, your experience, as opposed to speaking on behalf of what B did.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. It's so wise. And you were like, it's simple, but I forget that. I'm thinking of all these scenarios, like outside of relationships, where just like if I framed things from my feelings, and it would just be different. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so many people aren't taught that. Like, I wasn't, went to therapy as an adult and like figured out a few things, but it's very, it's hard especially in romantic relationships, romantic situations, because we're also all so, there's so much insecurity. There's so much, it can feel so personal and so, about you, which like it isn't, usually. Right. So it's a very difficult thing, but it's really, yeah, super helpful to hear.
Okay. On the topic of boundaries, that's like, this is a little bit, relevant to right now, but I feel like as people are getting vaccinated, dating might change. COVID boundaries. Do you have any tips? Things came in about that, with how to communicate that in a way in early dating, maybe even before a first date. It's probably going to be similar, but I'm just curious, Justine, your take on that.
Yeah, I have two funny things to say about that one, Kimmy. So I have a category called Life in Moderna Times, because yes. of all of these texts, or like these blasts from the past that I started getting around phase 1B in New York City. I had gotten my first dose at that point, and two of my other teacher friends were also in the same boat. And they texted me within literally the same 24 hours that I got this text from a guy from the past. And they're like, yeah, I was at the rock climbing gym and, we hooked up like last year, and all of a sudden he was like texting me, and I it was just weird. It was out of the blue. And then my other girlfriend said the same, like, yeah, out of the blue, this one guy. And then I go, me too. This morning, I go, what is happening? What is the common denominator here? Why are we all hearing back from these guys of our past? And then one of them had suggested, wait, we're all vaccinated with the first dose, and they're all of a sudden thinking that, our bodies are invincible or whatever. So they're ready to hook up again. And I was like, oh my God, those motherfuckers. Wow. They don't understand how science works. Okay. So anyways, that's how I came up with Life in These Moderna Times.
I love it.
And then the second part I'll say is that in the peak of COVID in New York City, in around like April or so, I was starting to, hear a lot of like guidelines on like how to communicate with people around COVID, and, making sure that any gatherings, you have to ask these questions first. And I'm looking at these scripts and I'm like, yo, these are the same scripts that I teach my sixth graders about consent when they have a crush on someone, so that it's flirting and not hurting. And mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. So then I was like, how can I put this all together, with like intersecting like what I do with consent education and now with like COVID safety protocols. And I'm like, if you were already practicing sexual citizenship, you're probably crushing it at social distancing protocol, because you have been well exercised asking questions like, who else have you been seeing? Have you already been tested? Who else might be there, right? What are you comfortable with? And so the silver lining with, I guess, the COVID protocols and the fact that we're in this pandemic is that people had to start asking these questions and kind of getting past that that barrier of, well, if I ask this question, it might imply that I don't trust this person. And it's like, or you're being a good citizen, making sure that we don't further spread an infection, which is what we should have always been doing anyway with all of the things, right? So now people have to. And, you know, even if like you're in an elevator and it's maximum two people, like in my building, you know, I'm getting into an elevator and I see another person waiting and I ask them like, do you want to share? I'm comfortable sharing. Mm-hmm. That's consent culture, right? And they're like, oh yeah, sure. You don't mind? I go, no, not at all. Boom. Okay. Yep. And then other people will respect, you know, I know they're an older person, so I want to set the boundary for them. So I just said, no, go ahead. You take it. I'll wait for the next one. Mm-hmm. You know? So like, yeah, I think there's a lot of intersection because people are now getting a lot more used to those questions. I just hope that that skill set translates to when they want to start being sexually intimate, that they continue to ask those questions. So now with just like COVID in general and dating, you know, I think it can look like a lot of ways. And I think some of the dating apps are actually trying to assist in that, mm-hmm. with like putting it in your profile as one of the filters. What type of dating are you comfortable with? Socially distanced, masked socially distanced, no mask, not socially distant, or virtual, you know, Zoom call only or whatever, right? Yeah. And so having it in there normalizes that we need to be talking about boundaries around COVID. I mean, and there are some even dating apps where are very explicit, like, you know, here's where you put, like, upload the PDF of your HIV test results. Like those already exist, but, you know, I just hope that people translate what we're already learning about COVID protocol into, STIs and talking about that and normalizing it, taking the shame and stigma away from that. But then also feeling like this is a great way to practice your boundaries. I'm like, well, I'm not comfortable. Like, let's do a FaceTime first. And then we can discuss, you know, comfort meeting up at the park. Mm-hmm. And we'll bring our masks. Or, you know, maybe you'll do a PCR 3 days beforehand or something. Or I have free access to a rapid test and then I can meet up with you. But I really always appreciate when somebody offers that before I even get to the point of asking them. That yeah. tells me already a lot about their character aligning with me. Like, oh, well, if you want, we can meet up this Friday and I can get a PCR on Monday. So I should have the results by then. And then we can make the reservations, right? Really, I was like, this is hot. This is consent yeah. culture. You respect not just like me, but like my health also. Yeah. And you respect your own health, which is attractive to me and a partner. So we have like these new filters that I think we can kind of screen people with based on their COVID citizenship.
Totally. I feel like it's also a good way to practice. Mm-hmm. Like for people like me who have had difficulties setting boundaries, I feel like I've gotten better at it this year because mm-hmm. I've had to be like, I don't feel comfortable doing that. Like if you guys do, rock on, but like I don't.
Right.
And that's like really been tough for me in the yeah. past. So it's, yeah. I think it's like an opportunity to show people in early dating that you are going to be communicative and like tell people what you need and what you want and be like, hey, this is the setting a precedent here. Like, right. like what you were saying earlier, Justine, like this is what to expect from me.
Yeah. I mean, I had a few dates, and this was in like December or November, where I could tell just based on the early text message exchanges that they were not going to be aligned on how I wanted to practice, you know, COVID safety, just by like, oh, wow. Like I would say something and the kind of like test the waters that way, saying like, oh, I'm just going to do another seamless. Cause even though, you know, they're allowing 25% occupancy, I just don't feel comfortable eating indoors. And then the response for one of these guys was like, oh, wow, you're really taking this thing seriously, huh?
And then everything.
And I replied, okay, well, it's time to compose a goodbye to this guy. And so, you know, stuff like that. Or another guy said, you know, I'm flying home to visit my family, blah, blah, blah. And I said, wow, you're ready for an international flight, huh? And he goes, well, and then he had some like really sad news with his family and that's why he had to go, but I'm going to quarantine in a hotel 2 weeks prior to seeing my mom. And then I said, okay, that tells me a little bit more. Like, you know, initially I was judging him and then I was yeah. like, okay, retract that judgment. So I'm able to screen like value sets, you know, with different types of seeds I might plant and see kind of how they address it.
Yeah, in some ways, it's a tragedy what has happened. I'm not trying mm-hmm. to minimize that. Mm-hmm. But to your point in dating, in friendships, Liza, like you mentioned, I have set more boundaries around COVID and I felt totally fine because it's this, I don't feel personally responsible. I feel like it's COVID's fault. Yeah. And then I'm communicating in I statements, actually. Like, I'm just not comfortable. It's just like I didn't cave to the social pressure because I was so scared of getting COVID when friends were like, you're so paranoid. I didn't cave. And I'm kind of proud of that now that I'm talking to you, Justine. Good. But okay, this is a bit, again, everyone, you must go read, DM Justine if you want help with goodbyes and any kind of, you know, boundary assertion. But I'm curious, Justine, when things come up in real life outside where you're not going to craft a text, like you and I are dating and we have a hard conversation or I want to assert a boundary or feel that I need to, I feel like for me personally in, you know, regular conversation in person, that's where I shy away. I prefer to like edit, like write something out. Yeah. I'm a much better writer. Like I'm speaking on a podcast right now, but I'm long-winded and chattering around. How would you, what thoughts do you have about, you know, when you're in the moment with someone and the goodbye, you feel like the goodbye might need to happen, but you're in person. Any thoughts on that? I know it's probably the same, but it just feels harder somehow to me.
No, it totally is harder. It totally is harder. I think people, you know, feel safety behind a screen. We know that with anonymous forums, but we also know that with being able to pause, reflect, edit, delete, add, and review before you press send. And I think there is something that needs to be honored with that because some people might be more, you know, rational and measured with that. And we would rather hear their measured, rational thoughts over text. If you don't have that luxury and you are in person and you know that maybe goodbye or boundary setting needs to occur and you know that that's probably going to happen, I encourage people to prepare for what they might want to say by writing it out still. It's like, all right, well, I'm going to meet up, you know, with her at brunch and maybe this is the time I'm going to have that talk with her. And I might even manage your expectation by saying, hey, I'm glad we're meeting up tomorrow for brunch. There's been something on my mind that I've been wanting to share with you. Mm-hmm. So it kind of already mentally prepares them for like, oh, something different besides the eggs Benedict is going to occur tomorrow. Okay. I was like, you know, I don't want to talk about it over text. I think it's more important that we talk about it face to face, but I'm just giving you the heads up that I have some news to drop or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's one way that you can mitigate the anxiety of that in-person live goodbye or boundary setting. If it's not something you expected to do, I always recommend starting with this is hard for me to say. Mm-hmm. And starting with that humanizing line because it prepares the other person, gives them time to be like, oh, something is about to happen. And it's like, I didn't really prepare any of this, but I feel the need to share something about it because this made me really uncomfortable. And then, you know, X, Y, and Z, and you say it. But I think one, it gives you time to take your breaths that you'll need to take because it's something difficult. You're humanizing the situation and honoring the, you know, improvisation that's about to occur by letting them know what I'm about to say isn't well-formed, but it's important enough that I'm willing to stomach the tension and tell you my raw emotion. And it might mean that I'll say things I'll want to revise later, but it's important enough that you know that it's hurt me. And there's a sense of urgency to it. Mm-hmm. So like kind of the underlying messages of that humanity that you preface with can be, I think, a really powerful and connective process, despite you possibly trying to disconnect from that person in the future.
Oh, it's all so, you're so wise. I'm just like sitting here being mind blown. Thank you.
Just a robust dating life. I credit a lot of my dating life to my ability to be at this point.
It's really cool. It's really inspirational too, I'm sure, for our listeners who are out there dating and struggling with it. I mean, most people come to this podcast because they find dating hard. So it's really, I hope everyone is as inspired as we are by like hearing from you and hearing that like a robust, oh my God, wait, what was the other word? I already forgot it.
introspective.
Introspective dating life is like very possible and very empowering. Justine, this has been so great. We're so grateful for all of the incredible knowledge you have dropped. Please tell everyone where they can find you, follow you, everything.
Sure. So my website for my overall sex education career is justinefonte.com, JustineFonte.com. And then the account we've been talking about this whole episode is on Instagram. It's _good_buys_. And you can just DM me directly in there to for a custom request, and I'll do my very best to help you out.
And we're going to link all of that below. As always, please go follow Justine. And thank you so, so, so much.
Thank you, Eliza. Thank you, Kimmy.
Thank you so much. This was great. And we're, again, just so grateful that you came on and shared so much knowledge with us.
I'm honored.